Next Chapter Podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
J.A.M. been walking us down through that 2012 edition, so it ain't nothing to you. Hundreds more to go and in need of a friend, the king of fleece for Angelo. Talking the 500 until the end. Talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. on the 500, talking the 500 until the end.
Concerto de Aranjuez. Adagio. Not to be confused with Adagio for Strings. That's the song from Platoon. Arguably one of the saddest songs ever written. The Platoon thing. Remember when William Dafoe's running? He throws his arms up. He's getting shot by the Viet Cong. But that's not from this. This is from Sketches of Spain by one of my favorite artists of all time, Miles Davis. Ooh, I just banged the mic. From the 1960s album Sketches of Spain. Did I say that twice? Who cares? It's also number 358 out of 500 on my show, The 500 with Josh Adam Myers, where each week a comedian listens to albums and talks about it with other comics and people of influence. What is going on? So I'm in New York, and I'm not going to lie to you guys. This album, like, hit the spot while walking through the Upper East Side, kind of living my life out here. Come and see me at the Comedy Cellar. I'm at the Comedy Cellar, either at Village Underground, Fat Black Pussycat, or the Comedy Cellar almost every night of the week. Check their website, comedycellar.com, or go to my Instagram, at Josh Adam Myers, and that is where, yeah, man, you'll be able to see me out here. I'm at the Stand, which is my home club. I can't stress this enough. I love it out here, man. I love Los Angeles. A lot of people are asking me why I moved. I really want to reach my potential. I really want to be out here and just work, man. I'm 41 years old. I never lived out here. I feel like it's time for me to really just, like, I really want to do a one-man show about the car accident I was in. I want to talk about Ange. I want to talk about really personal stuff. And you just can't grow like that as a comedian in Los Angeles. I love it. I'll be going back there. We got a goddamn comedy jam. We're about to announce August 22nd. I will give you the deets when they're ready. But it's going to be dope. So I'll be back in LA at least once a month. But I'm out here, man. And I'm moving into my new apartment on the 1st in Gramercy. So I'm not going to tell you the address, but, you know, buy me a gift. Send me a gift. If you love me, if you love this show, or you know what you could do? Join the Patreon. Because there's a lot of people that work on this show, and, you know, we are doing this on our own. We need your support. If you listen to the show every week, if you're following along, if you are in the Fleece Army, I'm begging you guys. You know, I hate to beg, but we need the money. $5 a month. It helps. And I mean that, man. If you listen, it's $5. I think it's like $60 for the year. Go to patreon.com/the500podcast. I'll send you a personal message. If you've already joined Patreon, send me a Instagram, and I'll do like a free, like, stupid cameo with me and Lekka. But do it, because I'd appreciate it. So, also, you know what you can do that can really help? Follow me at Josh Adam Myers. That really helps me. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. And go to our YouTube, Josh. It's youtube.com/Josh Adam Myers, and smash that subscribe button. Do it, guys. So, as everybody knows, Miles Davis is tattooed to my right arm. It was one of the first tattoos I got. We're going to talk about all of it. I grew up in a very jazzy household with my dad playing and listening to jazz. And so this record was a part of my life from a very, very early age. Not my favorite Miles record, but when you get to, like I said, dude, when you listen to this record on a walk or, you know, on an airplane, just somewhere where you can look out and get a view, it just changes the album, just everything, the essence, the vibrations of it. God, I'm just saying, that's all the LA shit in me still. The vibrations of the music. But I have a very special guest with very high vibrations, the one and only Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo is an incredible comic, Last Comic Standing. He's also the host of a new radio show called Who's Paying Attention on KBLA 1580 Talk in Los Angeles. He is a regular panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and his fourth comedy special, Heavy Lightweight, is on Amazon Prime. But he is a jazz fan, and this isn't the normal show that we're going to do. There's no Morty. Morty is going to be taking a break while he works on his album. We love him. You know, we wish him the best. He's been a huge part of the show since the beginning. And, you know, maybe he'll be back. We hope so. But, you know, the show just keeps going. And that's what I'm saying is, like, it's all love. We love you guys. And we want everybody to, you know, just listen to these records and just keep on keeping on. So dig this shit. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500 and listen free on all platforms. And if you listen on Apple, leave us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Follow me at Josh Anna Myers on all social media. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group, Run Back Crazy Evan. And for all things 500, go to our website, the500podcast.com. Well, nothing left to say, but here we go at number 358 with Sketches of Spain by... That's what I said at the beginning of the album. Miles Davis! I love you, Adam, but the second I click on, we're off to the races.
And he's got to go around noon.
No. Okay, then we got to do this. I don't even know what noon means because it's 2:04 here. And I mean, if you're going to go back in time. God, the audience, Fleece Army, if you heard the discourse that me and Alonzo just had prior to Adam hitting record, you guys would have thought we were the greatest podcast ever, dude. If you haven't noticed by the video, Alonzo, I have Miles Davis tattooed to my right arm. I have his Columbia Records logo.
That's a bit more dedication than I have served.
Many people. And to be honest with you, I would have gotten a much better tattoo, but I only had $100. I had this whole thing dreamed up where I was like, okay, I'm going to do this thing where it's like the picture of Miles where he's like, you know that famous picture of Miles where he's like kind of like in the shadows and he's going the whisper thing. I was like, that's what I want. I was like, how much is that? They're like, that's about $600. I was like, okay.
What a hundred bucks get me?
And they're like, we can do one of it, like an outline of his trumpet and a note. I was like, okay, let's do that. But I had no idea that you were this huge Miles Davis fan. I mean, when you did the jam a long time ago, you did Public Enemy, which I know you can't really do Miles Davis at the goddamn Comedy Jam, but I mean, tell me, like, just how did this start? Take me through your journey.
So let's back up. I grew up loving jazz, right? And I started out in the 70s in the fusion era, you know, listening to Stanley Clarke, Return to Forever, Weather Report, all of that stuff, Herbie Hancock. And then finding out that they played, you know, you had like Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock played with Miles in the 60s, you know, Chick Corea. Yep. Briefly played with Miles, definitely influenced by Miles. So you hear all of this. And then I started listening to Miles in like the early 80s. But here's the thing I think when you listen to Miles Davis, for me, okay, I can't speak very
Please.
I didn't get it. You know what I mean?
Like, neither did I.
I start out listening and everybody talks about, you know, he's a god. He's a god. And I'm listening and I'm like, I don't get it. I mean, he's good. It's interesting, but I'm not hearing that thing. And then I think you just listen to it over and over, and then you get it. You know, you just one day it started like, and since then, I've learned a lot about Miles. I've learned a lot about music. Marcus Miller is a good friend of mine. And I don't know if you know who Marcus is or Marcus's history.
Yeah, he played for the Vancouver Grizzlies. He was a power forward. Marcus Miller with the rebound.
Marcus Miller. And this is what's funny about Marcus. You know Marcus. You just don't know that you know Marcus.
Tell me how I know him.
So Marcus started out, I think his first pro gig was when he was 16. When he was 21, he's in New York. He's doing jingles. He's working with Luther Vandross on Luther's first album. By the way, he was Luther's musical director for his entire career. So everything you heard from Luther came from Marcus musically.
Nice.
At 21, and this is this mind-blowing shit here, Josh. Imagine this. At 21, you're in studio in New York playing some jingle for Fruit Loops or you know, the new, I don't know, Ford commercial. Mm-hmm. And he got a call. And it was Miles Davis to come. Miles wants him in studio. So he goes to see Miles, and he starts playing in Miles' band when he's 21 years old.
Oh, God. It's crazy. By the time
he wrote, are you familiar with Tutu?
Oh, come on, dude. Marcus, I got him tattooed to my arm, bro. What do you think
Marcus wrote Tutu.
Did he really?
And he wrote Tutu when he was about 28. Wow. Now, Josh, I don't know what you were doing when you were 28.
Ketamine.
But I wasn't in studio writing an album for Miles Davis.
No, you know? Most people aren't. No, I mean, that's the thing about Miles, because him being such a prodigy, he found other prodigies and knew this guy's special. Let's work together.
He looked for people. And like I say, I learned a lot about Miles from Marcus because he had such a close relationship. So what he did was he looked for people like him. In other words, people who, like you said, he saw the prodigy in them. He saw the talent in them, and he saw the willingness. You know, one of the things about Miles that I love, and I learned, again, learning this about him. So he started out, you know, in bebop. You know, he's with Charlie Parker and all those guys. When he went to New York, that's what he wanted to play, right? Dizzy Gillespie. Yeah. And he's playing like they do. He's playing fast. He's playing a bunch of notes. And then it hit him like, no, that's not who I am. I'm quieter.
Yes.
And what the musicians say, and you're a musician, so you know this better than I do, but they say it's the space that he left in between the notes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that he took his time and played what he wanted to play that I love. And then the other thing, and this is as a comedian, right? He did it for him. He didn't do it for you. He didn't do it for me. He didn't do it for the audience. The music he played for himself, or he
yes.
played for the band, or he played, or like we're talking about Sketches in Spain, he played with the orchestra, but it was never about, I'm gonna dumb it down for them, for the audience. I'm going to cater to the audience. He catered to the music. So, and as you know, as a comic, you start out trying to make everybody laugh, right? You're doing dick jokes and you're learning to juggle. You're making fun of fat people or
you see my act. You're just going through everything I do.
Right? So you're doing that because it's getting the laugh. But then you realize, like, I got to say what I want to say. You find your own voice on stage and you start talking about what you want to talk about. And it's not that you don't care that they laugh anymore. You know you can make them laugh. So now it's like, what else can I do?
Yeah.
So Miles did all of this bebop stuff. And then he said, okay, well, what can I do? You know, and that...
It's birth of the cool.
That, I think, is when he became... Well, I'm not going to say that's when he became Miles Davis, but that's when people started to take notice rather than say, oh, it's somebody else doing Bird or it's somebody else doing bebop.
Yeah, bebop and hardbop were all basically what was popular at the time. He didn't invent it, but he was a part of it. And
right.
from my understanding, when he goes, I want to do my own shit, then you get the birth of the cool.
Exactly.
And then you get...
You know what I love about the birth of the cool is you could argue that Miles Davis invented cool. Like, you could argue, like, yeah, the birth of the cool. Yeah, that was you. You, there wasn't cool, and then there was you, and then it was like, oh, this is what cool is. You know?
Yeah.
And again, that's the, and you know, as a performer, you know, the confidence it takes to step out and do your own thing, right?
And yeah.
Is tremendous, especially, you know, and now we look at, again, moving to comedy, you look at a guy like Chappelle, right? Who's on top of the world, who's making millions, they're offering millions more, and he's like, nah, fuck it, I want to do this. And he goes off and does his own thing, and the whole thing shifts with him. The whole thing shifts, like, yeah, we want to hear what you want to do. Well, it was the same thing with Miles, right? And then he did Kinda Blue, and this was recorded in, what, like 4 or 5 days, and it was like, this is the greatest jazz recording ever, right? This was everything in this record. It's the creativity, man. If you ask me what I love about Miles, what I love about any art, but what Miles had, it was the creativity. It was like, yeah, I'm going to do it this way.
Well, hey, friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good morning.
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Porn, Satan, drugs, therapy. It's not just the list of what I'm up to this weekend. I'm comedian Kiki Anderson, and those are just a handful of the taboo topics I've poked and prodded at so far on my podcast, Indecent, the show where we peel at the wallpaper of polite society. Each episode digs into the dark underbelly of our culture to dissect the things we aren't allowed to talk about around the dinner table, featuring conversations with comedians, activists, journalists, academics. They all help me figure out the who, what, and why behind what is and isn't acceptable behavior. Indecent with Kiki Anderson, where NSFW meets LMAO. Mwah.
Well, you know what, to back up what you're saying, because I was going to ask you this later. So the question is, because I love how you said the thing about the space in between, because that is stand-up comedy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not about the joke so much. It's about holding that crowd in the moment and waiting to drop the punchline or waiting to say the next thing. And it really is like a comparison. And maybe it is Chappelle, but what comedian do you feel is probably the most influenced by the style that Miles kind of provided for the universe and through art? Like, who would you say?
Well, I have to say, to an extent, I am. And I will tell you, one of the great compliments I get, Josh, and have got is, you know, I work with a lot of jazz guys, right? I do jazz cruises. I host jazz festivals.
I didn't know any of this.
I work with a ton of jazz artists.
Yeah.
And when I'm on stage making fun of them, because they there's nothing they love more than me cracking on them. And it's all improv, right? It's all verbal improv. And then they'll be like, man, that's jazz. Like, you just went up there with one idea, or you saw one guy wearing a hat, or you saw a T-shirt, and then you just went 10 minutes. You just did a 10-minute solo on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So coming from them, that is a great compliment. So I am definitely influenced by jazz. The other thing I like about jazz versus stand up and versus the, you know, the big shows and this and that is, don't try so hard. You know what I mean? Like when you look at music, right? When you have a big rock concert or something like that, they're working. You know what I mean? They're like, we gotta bang, bang, bang. We gotta pound this audience. It's big. There's pyro. There's this or that. When you go to a jazz concert, when you see a jazz artist, they're like, no, man, don't work so hard. Let it happen. Just play. Just play. You know, Robert Glasper, if you're familiar with Robert Glasper.
Yeah, you actually, I think we were at JFL and we were talking about jazz and you actually gave me a track. You were like, listen to this record. And it's incredible. I remember, I have it saved in my phone. I love it.
Right. So Glasper, he does a lot of hip hop stuff. He works with everybody from, you know, Kendrick Lamar and all of these guys. He scores movies. But he has a jazz trio. Mm-hmm. It's an old school trio, jazz, bass, and drums, and play some of the most fantastic music, you know, and it's quiet. You know what I mean? It's the talent speaks for itself. That's something I love about jazz, when the talent speaks for itself. And you see that with comics. You see some that are, there's a lot of noise and smoke and mirrors and stuff. And then you see when you get, you know, it's like The Cellar, right? You talk about The Cellar. When you get on stage at The Cellar, you got to be funny. You ain't going to fool them. You can't fool them. You can fool them for a couple of minutes. You maybe fool them for a set.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't fool them. And you certainly can't fool the comics in the back of The Cellar, right? They hear your shit. They come down the stairs and they're like, oh, come on.
Or I'm loving like, that. Dude, I'm loving that now, though. I'm loving when I see like Will and Cypher and Eric and, you know, I like Frenchie. I just, because I've only been there a few weeks, but it's like I actually play off seeing, you know, there was Al Franken in the cut a couple of days ago. Right. He had just gotten off and I was like, oh, I'm following Al Franken. And it's like, I don't know, man. It's the same thing. It's like where it's like it used to intimidate me. Now it's like this beautiful thing where I'm like, all right, let me show you guys. I'm different than y'all. So let me show you my solos.
When I started, one of my first jobs was doorman at the Laugh Factory. And I would just do spots, right? So I would do spots when people didn't show up. So on any given night, and you know, I'm in comedy 1-2 years, but I'm going on after Dom, after Damon Wayans, after George. And I tell people, like, the education I got back then, just doing that, just getting on stage, because George Lopez told me something that always stayed with me. He said, listen, don't even mention the famous guy. They already know him. You get up there and you do what you do. He's like, you don't have to tell them that was Damon Wayans. They fucking know that was Damon Wayans. Who are you? And that always stayed with me, you know? So... again, going into jazz and going into Miles and stuff like that, if I'm in a creative space where I'm just coming out of my head, that to me is the most pure. And I always tell people that the greatest joke is something that's said that is hilarious in that moment, but you won't be able to duplicate it because you were in that moment. This is getting back to what you were talking about, right? Being in the moment, in the silence. That moment, it was the greatest thing. You may not be able to duplicate it. It may not be something you can write down and do again, but it was in that moment. Well, it was the same way with Miles. Like, Miles played with his back to the audience.
Right? I love that. And I love that.
Again, I asked Marcus about that, and you know what Miles said? He said, who do I want to look at, my band or 10,000 motherfuckers I don't know?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Who am I talking to?
But he also moved around because I you know, you talk about space, and I'm going to bring this right back to the comedy thing in New York, is that, you know, one of the things I've been getting from a lot of the New York comics is like, man, you really utilize your space on stage. It's almost like you went to, like, you know, you were like a what do they call it? Like theater, you know, the acting people, thespians. I utilize the space that I'm given, whereas people are just standing there. Because when you move around, especially as a trumpet player, Miles used to move around because he was like, it sounds a little different over here. It sounds a little different over there. You know what I mean? And he was also
playing with other musicians. Like, he'd walk over to the guitar player and just start playing. This was the thing that always tripped me out. Imagine how intimidating that was to be in his band, especially when you were new, for Miles to come over. Now he's standing in your face playing the trumpet, right? And you're supposed to play something back. And you're like, don't fuck it up.
Anyone
he put on that stage was good enough to hang with that. Now, what you're talking about, and again, this is energy, right? This is energy. You are an energy act. You do that.
Yeah.
But then you have guys like me or Tom Papa you know, Papa doesn't take two steps through entire 1 hour set, but he brings the audience into him. So there's no right or wrong. There's both ways to do it. It depends on your energy. The fake part is, and like in the early 2000s when we were doing Dublins, right? And I was following Dane every week. You know, I used to sit on a stool and do my act, right? And there was nobody who was bigger or had more energy on stage than Dane. And they were like, you just sit there. It's like, well, what, am I going to try to be Dane Cook? Can you imagine me jumping up
He's
around?
So big.
I said,
so...
the front row would be terrified.
You put your foot through the goddamn floor with your weight, dude. You're like 6'9", bro. You're built like a goddamn power forward, bro.
So again, it's about doing, it's ultimately, it's always about doing your own thing. But that's what takes the courage. That's what, especially with us, man, when Hollywood says, you're supposed to be this and you're supposed to be that. Bring us this, bring us that, right? It's all formulated. And you know, you see a sitcom, right? Dad is dumb. Mom is smart. Kids are sassy. Little girls smarter than little boys or whatever. You know what I mean? It's all formulated shit, right? And then, but if you do your own thing, you bring your own voice. That's the best thing you can do. And in music, Miles did that, and then he did it to himself, you know what I mean? Like, so he did, you know, like you said, Birth of the Cool, and you know, you look at Kind of Blue, you look at Sketches in Spain, which is the orchestral thing and just beautiful solos and this and that, right? And then 10 years later, Bitches Brew, like this
not to cut you off of what you're saying is, and this is what I love about Miles Davis, is he knew that Bop, he had to move on from Bop. He does Cool. He knew, he creates Modal, Kind of Blue, biggest jazz record in the history of jazz. I used to play it every wedding I ever DJed. During dinner, I would put, they would give me a fucking album that had like, you can't take that away. I was like, no, I'm putting on Kind of Blue because I want to hear that. And then, you know, he starts getting into the more, like, he starts getting, he starts hanging out. I mean, and is from my understanding, he was hanging out with Sly and the Family Stone. He noticed that rock and roll was where it was at. It's all electric. And he goes, well, this jazz thing is dead. I have to move on and create. And he does Bitches Brew. And I mean, Bitches, you know what's funny, Alonzo, is because I'm kind of like you, where I grew up. And maybe I didn't catch the beginning, but did you say like your family was listening to a lot of jazz? And so it was kind of in your childhood. So did I. My dad, Four Freshmen, Miles Davis, Coltrane, Joe Pass. I can go on and on and on. The record collection was thick. And as a little kid, I used to listen to records with my dad. And then I got into heavy metal, Guns N' Roses and stuff like that. And then, you know, as you start getting older, you're like, jazz is lame, man. I'm never listening to that. That's so whack, dude. And I didn't appreciate it or anything. And then in my 20s, I was DJing private parties around DC and Baltimore. And I used to drive around to do shows on the weekend. And, you know, you only, back in the day, I only had a tape player in my Jeep. And you get tired of the tapes you're listening to. And so you go on the radio and the radio sucks. DC 101, it's the same five songs they play over and over. Like, you know, 98 Rock, same five songs. Linkin Park into this, into that. And I remember there was a station called WPFW that, if I'm not mistaken, was the Howard University public radio station. And 89.3. My dad used to listen to it every Sunday when he drove us to Hebrew school. We used to call it the Jazz Mobile. And I remember I was like, I'm going to put on 89.3 because they were doing something around Miles's birthday. And I started listening to it. And this is a 21-year-old kid. I mean, 21-year-old baby that's listening to hard rock, grunge, going to raves, doing all just. And I remember it like it suddenly just went boom. And then that was it. And then I just became obsessed, and I bought Birth of the Cool immediately. I had Sketches of Spain because my dad had this record and I'd listen to it. But then I went immediately to, I got to listen to Bitches Brew. That's the one that I know is going to be cool, which, I mean, I don't know how you feel. Like, how does Bitches Brew play into the full, your love for jazz? And how do you appreciate something like that as compared to something as like this?
So, from what I understand with Bitches Brew, it's kind of what you said. He was listening to Sly Stone, you know, James Brown was big. Funk was just starting out, but the other thing was the electronic instruments. Yeah. You know, there were electric keyboards and this and that, right? And Miles, like, it was something new. It was like, okay, let's get these electric instruments, you know. And you had Herbie Hancock in the band back then, and Wayne Shorter, who is, if you ever listen to Wayne Shorter on a saxophone, I've heard saxophone players be like, yeah, Wayne is in a different category. What Wayne does is, like, nobody else can do what Wayne does, you know, with a saxophone, you know. It just, so Miles, once again, he was like, okay, so this is this new thing, this electronic sound, this funk, this soul, but he still incorporated it all in jazz, because he wasn't trying to write a hit record. He wasn't playing, you know what I mean? Like, there's a difference. He was still doing him. And I heard a great story about, and I think it was Columbia or CBS, whatever record company he was with at the time. And the guy said, you know, Miles has a new album. And they were like, great. And they said, but he wants to call it Bitches Brew. Now think about this. This is 1970, right? We ain't calling things bitches publicly. And they said,
and cold brew hadn't even been invented yet until years later.
Like, so they said he wants to call it Bitches Brew. And they were like, okay. Cause who's going to argue with Miles Davis, right? Who's going to say, no, Miles, you have to call it something else, right? You don't get to do that. You know, he famously changed the cover of an album from a white woman to a black woman, because he was like, that's, you know.
And I think there's titties on the cover too.
Yeah. He's
bro, again, titties.
He knew who he was.
Yeah.
He knew who he was. And this is something that record was completely new. And that record led to the fusion era of the 70s. Like I say, when we had, you know, Chick Corea and Return to Forever and Weather Report and John McLaughlin and all of this fusion stuff. He kind of opened that door where now the musicians were like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to do electric music. We're going to just play, you know. My aunt Altenise, may she rest in peace, was a huge jazz lover and ran a jazz appreciation club in San Francisco and this and that. And she was from that school of, if you plug it in, it's not jazz. Right.
A lot of people believe that. Yeah. A lot of people don't think once it goes electric, it's not jazz. But if it's, as long as it's improvisation, I took history of jazz in college, bro. As long as it's improvisation, because you could say that who's the guy that everybody loves? Oh, Frank Zappa could be jazz. There's so much. So,
you know, and George Duke, who was a brilliant musician of all types, but definitely jazz, he played in Zappa's band in the 70s, you know. But these guys, this era, once again, Miles was leading the pack, you know. And when Miles died, a lot of people don't know, he had started playing hip hop. He had started playing with hip hop.
Definitely in the sound of it, because I mean, that was popular in the time, I think, that he was doing, but that's what he did. Dude, this is why I love Miles, and this is why I like a comic like Dave Chappelle, and this is why I love a band like the Beatles and Radiohead, is because the purpose of being an artist is you start with your intro. This is how I'm introducing myself to the world. Let's do the Beatles just for argument's sake. I come in, She Loves You, I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's the most candy pop, Brit pop shit you're ever going to hear in your life. And then what do? They go, all right, well, we're going to start getting into, you know, a little bit more, you know, like Help and some other songs that are a little bit away from that, still in that vein. And then it's like, okay, well, the world is turning into folk music. Then we're going to do Rubber Soul. And now it's going to psychedelic. So let's really go out there and venture into uncharted territories. And we create Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour. And it's just evolution. Radiohead started with Creep, and if you listen to their last three records, it is nothing like Creep, and that's what Miles did. It's like, you got to push yourself, and even if it fails, you at least tried something different. That's why there's so many bands. I'm not going to name names, the Killers, but there's a lot of bands out there that keep making the same album over and over again, and I think that's what's beautiful, and I think that's why I love someone like Chappelle. And I love, you know, he's so, and even Burr, it's like they're just so different because they have a style and it just keeps evolving and they push deeper. And next thing you know, they're saying something more than just a regular joke about a man and a woman in a relationship. They're saying something about society. And Miles's music, it kind of was the evolution of what was going on. I mean, Bitches Brew could be a reaction to what was happening in the world in the 70s.
Yeah, well, it was the late 60s, right? So you had the civil rights movement, you had Vietnam, right? You had the, free love, hippie world, whatever you want to call it, that going on, to the sexual revolution beginning, which Miles' sexual revolution kind of, lasted a while, but, he had some phenomenal women in his life, but anyway, yeah, all of that played into his music. All of that played into Bitches Brew because it was, this is something new. And there was a little anger, right? Because in society, in the 60s, in the late 60s, society was getting angry. They were, it was that whole anti-establishment vibe, right? That whole anti-establishment vibe. Even look at the clothes he wore. Look at the clothes. He went from being a jazz artist, wearing a suit, wearing nice clothes, or this or that, to suddenly wearing getting into the whole bell bottoms leather thing. And there was a woman he was with, and I don't remember her name, but she was a young woman, and she was the one who was like, "You got to change your style. You got to start dressing like people dress now." And so he went from that button down professional jazz look, like jazz musician, go on stage, to his style. So everything changed. It takes a risk to be willing to make that change, especially when you're established. When you talk about bands doing the same music, one of the things is, well, their fans expect it. And there was a story I heard once about Bono telling someone in U2, like, "Wait, it sounds the same." And the guys was like, "Yeah, because we're U2. Like, this is how we sound." You know what I mean? Like this is U2. This is how we sound. You look at The Police, right? The Police, phenomenal band. But like you said, the records, they all had that kind of rock reggae vibe to them, right? It changed. And then when Sting decided he wanted to do his own thing, what did he do? He went out and got 5 jazz musicians. And mm-hmm. said, "I'm going to go solo with these guys," and that was a different sound. And he went in a different way with that. So, but again, there's a security to doing the same thing, and when you're famous, there's a financial security to doing it. So yeah, so it takes some courage to step out of that. But Miles, I think Miles, he had to, just because he was so creative, he couldn't do the same thing. He couldn't do another kind of blue.
No, he couldn't.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers, all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Let's talk about this record. Because this is such an interesting album, especially if you only know, because most people only really know Kinda Blue or Bitches Brew, which are like the two biggest records. like, how does this record make you feel? When did you first hear this record? Let's take me there. Let's start there. When did you first hear this album?
I will tell you, it had to be in the 80s because that's when I was learning, right? That's when I'm learning. And you hear one Miles thing and you get it. And then you're like, oh, let me get this. Let me get that. Obviously, the big difference is the orchestra. You know, he's not playing with a quartet or a quintet. He's playing with an orchestra. And that's so that now that's a whole different backing. Okay. And again, I'm not a musician, so I don't know how to put it into musical terms. But an orchestra, what kind of dog is that?
Doberman. Like a dog. Cool. You see her?
Yeah,
I'm licking.
I got Hulk. I got a Great Dane puppy. He's sleeping right behind me.
Oh my God, that thing's gonna be massive, bro.
Yeah, but the orchestra. Now you have a sound that fills the room, fills the space, right? And then him doing his solo on the horn. It's beautiful, and again, I keep coming back to this word, but it's quiet. Because he has them backing him, but he's not trying to be bigger than them. He's playing his thing. You know what I mean? He's not trying to play louder. Like if you know, who Maynard Ferguson is, right?
You know, I do,
Maynard
Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. So when Maynard Ferguson plays a trumpet, he's playing loud. You know, he's playing loud, and he'll have the orchestra behind him. Like I remember, he did the theme from Rocky once, and he's blowing, you know, his face was probably purple and this and that. Like Miles never blew that hard. Quiet. He's you know, he's like, you listen to me. I don't play to you. You listen to me. So now it's just a bigger thing with the orchestra, makes the whole sound bigger, but he's still doing him in front of it.
No, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I listened to this with my dad years ago, man. I mean, fuck. It was like my dad didn't have a lot of Miles records, but he had this one because he loved it. He had Porgy and Bess, too. He had the other Gil Evans record. And, you know, listening to it back then, it was like, I mean, this isn't the Miles I thought it was going to be because it is that bigger sound. It is the orchestra. And it's one that just never really made its way into my regular Miles rotation. Every once in a while, maybe I would put it on because I want to hear the first song. Because, the first song, I'm going to fuck it up, Concerto de Aranjuez. God, I'm white. Adagio, which is 16 minutes of the record, is so beautiful. You know, and that's, in my opinion, that's the whole record. That 16 minute song is the whole record. The first 4 minutes of it are some of the most beautiful music Miles might have ever done, in my opinion. And so I put it away. Alonzo, I put it away for years. And then, of course, it's coming up on the podcast. We're getting ready to do this. And then I moved to New York, which I can't shut up about. Everybody, Fleece Army won't tell me. I that's all I talk about, but I'm excited. I love it here. And there is something about music to image. And to walk around this city, walk on the East River, which is what I've been doing with the dog, and listening to this on some really good headphones. I cannot stress enough to every person that listens to this podcast, get some good headphones, put this record on, and go to a walk, whether it's in a park, whether it's in the city, whether you're in the middle of fucking nowhere in you know, Oklahoma. It creates a mood that brought me to tears. Alonzo, I'm not gonna lie, like music really affects me. This, the especially that first song, it's like it's there's some really beautiful moments in this, and it just crushed me. And maybe it's just with everything that's going on and a move is very stressful, or maybe it is just, this is such a beautiful city, it's such a beautiful record that it touched me so much. Go ahead.
First of all, I love what you said about the headphones, because my girl will listen to music through her phone. like with just the phone speakers. And I'm like, how can you, and I will,
blasphemy.
I have like the portable Bose speaker. And I'm like, at least use this. If you're not going to turn on the system, at least just use this. But how can you listen to it through a phone? Right. And then what you said, when you put on good headphones, you hear things that you don't hear through anything else, right? You don't even a great sound system or whatever, you hear the subtleties in the phones that you don't hear anywhere else. So that there phones. Is a beauty to that. Now, you might not want to get hit by a car, so you may not want to have
stay on the sidewalk. Sound. Stay on the sidewalk at least, and be aware of your surroundings.
Listen,
people.
Like I said, you may not want to get hit by a car. Welcome to New York, Josh. You think the sidewalk's going to protect you?
I mean, I've dodged some things so far. I mean, I've seen a lot of crazy people. Trust me, dude. I lived in Baltimore and in Washington D.C. Besides here in L.A., you have to be aware of your surroundings when you have noise cancellation headphones on.
Pan Piper also, just because Pan Piper has a melody. You know,
yes.
There's a melody to it. But when you're listening to this, when you're listening to any of this, and again, this is what I said about Miles, where you listen repeatedly to something, and then you hear something you didn't hear before, and then you know, suddenly you just get it. You know what I mean? Just you know, like, you know, let's go back to Kind of Blue, right? Because that's the biggest one. When you listen to All Blues, right, and everybody seems to talk about So What, and they love So What, and it's a great track, but All Blues, to me, it's just that repetitive, just do, do, do. And it's like they're not trying, and then it's like you play something and then you come back to it, and it just stays right here, you know. And I was trying to explain that to my girl, like, listen to it, because she listens to a lot more pop music and hip hop and stuff like that, and I'm the old guy who listens to jazz a lot, but I was like, just it, they're right here, and they don't feel the need to go anywhere else from that, just solos, individual, but the overall vibe of the song stays right there. And like you said, you know, when you do 16 minutes, like, they had no problem playing a 16 minute track or a 15 minute track or you know, sometimes 20 minutes. I mean, there were records where the whole side one was one song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Jack Johnson, that record, I think it's called The Ballad of Jack Johnson. I mean, that's just, there's two songs, or maybe four songs on the whole record, if I'm not mistaken.
Here's the thing, you know, because you talk, you know, we all saw the Queen movie, right, when they did Bohemian Rhapsody, and you have the record exec saying, 6 minutes? Nobody's going to listen to a song for 6 minutes. I don't think there was any record executive that said to Miles Davis, you know, that's too long.
Yeah. Now, first of all, you can't say anything, Miles. He's a fucking king, dude. Dude, Kind of Blue. You brought up Kind of Blue. Like, I mean, my favorite song, maybe one in my top five songs ever made, is Flamenco Sketches. And I'm checking right now to see how long it is. I mean, that's a 9.5 minute song, and I don't want it to end. I don't want it to end. Just like I didn't want, I'm telling you, they could have done this first. They could have done, and I agree. The Pan Piper, incredible. I love the ending. I love Solea, if that's how you pronounce it. It's all good. It all equals just one track. There is a part, I think, in Saeta where it suddenly breaks into like an army thing. If Adam, I would have had you pick tracks out if I wasn't, you know, dicking around all day setting up this fucking equipment. But I did a good job. Do I sound better, everybody? Lekka?
Sound great.
Yeah. Thank you, buddy. Length of a song means nothing. If they're taking you on a journey, which Miles does, and he creates the mood, sometimes the song needs to be 36 minutes long. You know what I mean? If that's what he wants to do, and that's the art that he wants to create, each and every one of these parts and sections of this record all make sense. And what's great is that he's got a full catalog of other music that has shorter songs. I mean, some of the stuff off of Kind of Blue, very short. I mean, Miles Runs a Voodoo Down, if I'm not mistaken, off of Bitches Brew, might be one of the I might be wrong. It might be 16 minutes, or it also might be 6 minutes. But there's some tracks on Bitches Brew that are super long, and there's some that are super short. It's just whatever he feels necessary is what he's going to do. Just like, let's bring it back to comedy. When you're writing a joke, sometimes, dude, right now what I love doing in New York is I have these jokes where I used to add all this exposition just to get to this punchline. And then I was like, you watch all these other dudes that are just set up, punch. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do what Louis did. Go right to the punch. And then just add more from that punch. But get to that punch as quickly as possible.
Yeah, get to the punch and then tag it.
And then, yeah. And then sometimes when you're writing and telling a story, the story's longer and the punch is at the end. You have to add the exposition. And I feel this record and a lot of Miles's records are a journey. They're a journey. And because there's one concrete, vibe through the whole thing.
And again, to make the comparison to Chappelle, when Dave did the special in Austin, right, a couple of years ago, and when he told the story of Emmett Till, do you remember this? He talked about Emmett Till was a black kid who was accused of whistling at a white woman, and they beat him to death and threw him in the river. And his mother, when they found the body, he's from Chicago. He was in Mississippi visiting relatives and stuff. And his mother said, no, keep the casket open, because they need to see what they did to my child, right? So it's one of the most painful stories in black history, but it was also one of the sparks for the civil rights movement because it showed how truly cruel they were, et cetera. So getting to what your point of telling a story. So Dave told this story during his comedy hour, and then it led into something funny. Not Emmett Till, but he led it into something funny. And you're like, do you know how brave that is and how insane that is to tell a story that serious and that sad in the midst of a comedy special? But he needed to do it because of the arc of the special, because of the arc of the storytelling. And it's the same way with a track. When you do a track like, I was just looking at it, In a Silent Way.
Yeah, I love that so much.
That's a 20-minute song. And there are parts of it where it is silent, where it's just, you know, but it's 20 minutes. It's him and Wayne Shorter basically having a conversation and then letting us listen.
Yes.
But it's 20 minutes and they didn't feel a need to rush it. And like you said, in comedy, sometimes you have setup punch, and I'm more of a setup punch guy and this and that. But then there are stories. Recently, I've been telling a story of Charlie Case on stage, and Charlie Case was a vaudeville guy who became, a lot of people say, the first stand-up comedian, because he just stopped doing all the vaudeville. He stopped the blackface and the costumes and the singing and dancing, and he just stood up there on stage and told a story that was funny. And he used to swing his arm for emphasis, and that became the punchline. Like, that's where punchline comes from this guy Charlie Case swinging his arm for emphasis in a story. And the story is powerful, and it impacts me because this is where stand-up came from. And as a black person, he stepped out of the blackface and all of that shit that you had to do in the late 1800s, early 1900s, just to be black and get on stage. So it's an impactful story, but it's a story worth telling. So like you said, where you have sometimes where you're telling a story and you're just putting a lot of decorative words in and painting a picture and this and that, but you don't need it. You can just get to the punchline. But then there are other pieces, other stories, other bits, whatever you want to call it, that you do have to tell the entire story for it to work, So, and I think it was the same thing musically, but then you also have in jazz, because there's so much improvisation, I have Miles playing Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper.
I know, I love that.
For 3.5 minutes, and I have him playing it for 12 minutes. On his live record, it's like a 12 or, 15 minute, whatever it is, because he's with a live band, he's doing a show, and they're improvising and they're playing with it. And like you said, when he's getting in the face of the guitar player and the guitar player has to step up or whatever. So, and this is what I was talking about the beauty of jazz and the beauty of comedy is what happens in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment on stage. And as you know, you can do the same bit, but then one day you do it and some other things come to you and you're like, that's it. Or you can have, I don't know if you've had this experience. I've had this experience where I couldn't make something funny for a year. I had the idea and I knew there was something funny, but I couldn't make it work. And then suddenly something hit and it was like, that's the joke. That's
yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I remember we keep talking about Chappelle, but he did a Q&A once at the Comedy Store after like a 3-hour set. And we were all there as open micers and he was asking a question and Rail Battle asked a question about what if you got a premise and you got a joke that you know is funny, but you just can't make it funny yet. And he goes, you got to hold on to it because maybe you're not ready to tell it yet. You know,
yeah.
Maybe you're not, you need, sometimes you need a few years to grow. I think, and that's the same thing that we could throw back to Miles is, you know, Miles probably wanted to do some, you know, some crazier shit, but he was just like, as a performer and as where he was at in his career, he was like, this is what I'm at now. And this is what feels right. You know,
well, also what he did was he changed the band.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely got guys that I felt could kind of go with whatever direction he wanted to go.
Well, no,
to,
what
sure.
I mean is when he changed, sometimes when he changed the music, he knew he needed new musicians to play it.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what I was saying, but I just, you said it way better. all right, for time, because you have to be out of here in 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, I
all right, so let's.
No. I have a job now, Josh. My day is compressed.
Really? You started working at a Panera Bread?
I'm on the 4 to 12 shift at the Starbucks. No, I'm doing talk radio. I'm doing a new progressive talk radio station here, and I do drive time 4 to 7. So, you know, I got to prep, and then I got to get down there to the studio and then be on for 3 hours.
Yeah, dude.
Let's
hit you, because I'll promote the shit out of it too, and we'll do it at the end, but let's get some facts and then we'll get you out of here. Okay. Here we go. All right. These are some random Miles Davis facts. Well, first of all, here, let me do this first fact. This is about, let's just get to the meat and potatoes of this record. Davis's wife, Frances Davis, insisted he accompany her to a performance of flamenco dancer Roberto Iglesias. Inspired by the performance, Davis bought every flamenco album he could to get at Colony Record Shop in New York City. And then he paired it up with Gil Evans. And they created this record as a program of compositions largely derived from the Spanish folk tradition. So that is how we get Miles Davis into this record. Now, this one is just very random and I kind of liked it. Miles, among his pre-show rituals, were avoiding food and sex. He was inspired by fighters Joe Louis and Sugar Ray Robinson, so he avoided shaking hands before performances. Also, like a boxer, he tied his shoelaces as tightly as possible on shoes that were one size too small. And Miles does that because he wanted to make himself hungry and unsatisfied.
Uncomfortable. Yeah, a little uncomfortable. Yeah.
I mean, you do have any weird shit that you do?
I haven't done that yet. No. I don't know if I'd be funnier in smaller shoes. But I get that. And the flamenco thing, that was because he heard a completely new kind of music.
Yeah.
Right. To him, like he had never heard anything like that. And now he's like, oh, shit, this, you know, mind blown.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Let me give you another one. Davis had a throat operation in 1957 to remove nodes from his vocal cords. He was told not to raise his voice for 10 days. 2 days after he was told this, he shouted at someone, either a record company owner or a booking agent. I mean, we have all done that. It's like, according to Davis, it tried to convince him me to go into a deal I didn't want and permanently damaging his voice and giving him a rasp, which is going to lead to this story. And then I'm going to get into rapid questions after that, because the other facts are just like he had met and talked to a young Philip Seymour Hoffman, how he quit heroin. But this is one of my favorite stories. Gerard Carmichael once called me to tell his friends that he was having dinner with this story. So my dad met Miles Davis. My dad was in the mid-70s, early 70s. My dad was down from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and staying at the Four Seasons in Washington, D.C. on some like conference for whatever my dad did at the time. And he was an accountant. And he gets in the elevator, and there is Miles Davis. Big fucking glasses, the big bug eye glasses, a fucking boa, a jacket that probably cost, you know, $9,000 for 1972, you know. And my dad, huge fan of Miles, and they're on the thing and they're going down. And my dad goes, hey, you're Miles Davis, right? And Miles goes, nah, man. My dad's like, oh, okay. Of course it's Miles Davis. He knows it's Miles Davis, right? And then they get to the stop where they're both going to get off. And as the door's about to open, my dad looks over at Miles and he goes, hey, man, I know you're not Miles Davis, but if you run into Miles Davis, tell him I really dig his music. And Miles takes his glasses, pulls them down to his nose and goes, thank you, baby.
Like I said, invented cool.
Invented cool. He invented it.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
All right, rapid questions, and we're going to get you out of here, okay? Favorite song on the record?
I'm going to go with Pan Piper, the melody.
Okay. Least favorite song on this record?
Tough one. Soleil, but it's hard okay. to say, but I'll pick that one.
Okay. What song on this record would you fuck to?
Concerto de Adagio, but only for the first about 4 minutes, and then we'll
minutes, dude. Yeah. That's when you go get some orange juice, rehydrate.
If she catches me at the right time, but definitely she ain't getting the whole record. No,
no, dude. I would probably do I do Will-O-Wisp. Will of the Wisp. It's only 3:47. I go in, I go out, I'm done, dude. I can't do no concerto. It's come on. Think I got concerto energy? And last question, does this record deserve to be on the 500 greatest albums list and why?
Ooh, you mean, see, that's a tough one. The only reason I'm going to say no is because of his other records that will be there. Okay, Kinda Blue, Bitches Brew, they're going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's leave room for some other artists.
Okay. You don't think this is his best work?
No, I don't.
You don't think it's even up there in the top five?
For him?
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, Kinda Blue, I think, is... And people are like, oh, well, that's just the most popular. But it's like, it's the most popular for a reason.
Completely. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
That one. And then Bitches Brew, again, new generation, completely new type of music. Completely, you know, and Marcus said something to me one time. We were talking about Bitches Brew. And Marcus said, yeah, now imagine smoking weed or dropping acid for the first time and listening to Bitches Brew, right? Because remember, this is 70. This is when that happened. So imagine listening to that. So you got to put that record in the top 500 of all time.
And it is. And it is. You know? And so it kind of blues is number 12. Yeah. So it's in a place like, so, and Bitches, go ahead.
You can argue for Sketches to be there, but again, and the only reason I say it's not, you know, it's like sports, right? It's like how many records does a Michael Jordan have, or LeBron James, or Kobe, or Shaq, or somebody like that? So are you going to put them in all of these categories, or can you just put them there based on, you know, one or two? You know what I mean? Like, you could give them the whole record book, but let someone else shine. Like LeBron... Yeah, I don't know if you're a basketball fan at all. Come on. You got an NBA shirt on.
Dude, I have the Washington Wizards logo tattooed to my arm, bro. You think I'm doing that just to let people know I'm from D.C.?
So for I'm going to argue for 7 years, the MVP trophy should have been called MVP other than LeBron.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, you're
they
right.
Just couldn't give it to him every year. So it should have been, well, you know, the MVP other than LeBron is Russell Westbrook. The MVP other than LeBron is KD. But LeBron's carrying a different team to the finals every year. There's really no question who's the greatest basketball player on earth for that era, right?
Yeah.
But they're like, but we can't just hand him the trophy every year. So it's the same thing with Miles. It's like, okay, we can't put all of his records or you know, we got to let somebody else in. We got to let some other artists in, right? So you know, if Sketches of Spain is in, now what are we going to do about Herbie Hancock and his early stuff? Where do we put that? You know what I'm saying?
I'm pretty sure. No, I get it, but I'm pretty sure Watermelon Man's in there.
Yeah, definitely. This is why I'm saying Sketches, I wouldn't put it in the top 500 just because Miles has other entries there and we want to leave room for some other people.
I respect that 100%. You're actually, Adam, since you've been working here, is he the first person that has actually said no?
Yeah, no, that's right? The first time someone's like, yeah, and I like the reason because you want to let other people talk. But yeah, this is the first time that they're like, nah, maybe not.
And by the way, Adam, fucking wearing the Metallica shirt
today,
dude.
I try to wear a music shirt, even if it doesn't apply to what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Miles Davis and Kurt Hammett used to jam together, and their kids used to play in pools. I made all that up. Come on, dude, you really fucking think Metallica and Miles? Around. He's like, hey, Kurt Hammett, who is the master of puppets? And just, no, yeah. Alonzo, this was great. Promote away. Anything you want to promote? I know you just mentioned the radio show, but please do it again and tell us everything that you want everybody to know about.
It's KBLA 1580, and you can listen to it through KBLA1580.com. It's terrestrial radio in LA, but it's on the internet. Also, AlonzoBowden.com. I'm still touring, man. I'm still banging it. You know, I'm in Colorado this weekend. I have coming up, I'm going to be back on Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR. I'm co-hosting the O'Hare Jazz Festival outside of Chicago, August 7th and 8th.
Yeah.
So I'll be there. Like I told you, man, that's my vibe because, you know, you talk about cool audiences, man. A jazz audience, grown folks who are just like there is a great audience for comedy. Again, you don't have to work so hard. You don't have to yell at them and bang them over the head. You can just hit them with something and they you know, they know what you're talking about. So that stuff is coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I'm going to visit Josh in New York because now I don't need a hotel. I just crash.
There's
plenty of room because it's completely empty.
Completely empty right now. I got a dog. And, dude, I was trying to make a riff. Like, do you ever, like, just in the middle of one of those jazz sets go, just go all Ella on them? Alonzo, this was great, buddy. Thank you so much, man.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. And yeah, I'm glad we got it to work because, you know, schedules were kind of crazy this week. But here we are. Now, let me ask you something. Are you doing anything virtual JFL next week?
I will be there. I will be at the New York shows for the Nasty Show and I'll be seeing everybody. I am doing JFL Cancun in November. So while you're in L.A. doing your JFL shit, I'm going to be doing JFL shit, drinking a virgin daiquiri at a five-star resort.
I've done Cancun. You're going to have a great time.
Nice.
Have a lot of material because you're going to see the same audience for a lot of different shows.
What they're paying me, I'll write 3 new hours, bro. Also, I'm doing the jam. We're going to make the announcement soon, but we're going to be doing it in LA and we're going to be doing it on a regular basis. I'll be flying in for it. And I want you to come back and do it because you killed it, man. And we don't have to do Public Enemy. We'll do something fun. But dude, this was great. I mean this sincerely, dude. I had a blast today.
Thank you, Josh. This worked out great. I'm glad we got to do it. And fuck Adam, you know, thank you for making it work.
What'd I tell you? The one and only Alonzo Bowden. Follow him on Instagram at ZoFunny, ZoFunny. Follow him on Twitter at Alonzo Bowden. Listen to his radio show, Who's Paying Attention, on KBLA 1580 Talk in LA. I think it's streamed everywhere. And for all things Alonzo Stiley, go to his website, alonzoboden.com. So, we just listened to Miles Davis from 1960. For new music, we got Marquise Hill, a trumpet player from the South Side of Chicago who won the 2014 Thelonious Monk International Jazz Competition and called Dauntingly Skilled by the New York Times. You're listening to Ari's I Am Mars off his 2021 release, Soul Sign Instrumental. Find all the links at the500podcast.com. And we want your music. So if you want your music played on the podcast, if you were influenced by one of these records, send us your song, guys. 500podcast@gmail.com. Next week, Rolling Stones week. It's our first one with the RS dub. Between the Buttons, 1967, it came out. Listen to it. Do your homework. Doogle doogle. Stay fleecy.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind, and right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.
Next Chapter Podcasts.